drinking town with a football problem. Hey everybody, welcome into the Piffles Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Alex.
I'm Steve.
And that's it. No Amy this week. She's not feeling too well, so we're going to have to do the show without her. I know that everybody's going to stop listening now, because we all know that Amy is she's the real MVP.
Does that mean we get to pick the Hottie Bowl again?
I think so.
Oh, goody.
And we all know good things happen when we pick the Hottie Bowl.
I got like 20 minutes to think up a good one. All right.
Give us a follow on Twitter, at PifflesPod. You can follow me, at RealAlexD.
And give me a follow, at Safamod.
Amy's at CFL Hottie Bowl, so give her a follow there as well. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. Or on Instagram, just search PifflesPod. And check out PifflesPodcast.com. Coming up in this week's show, we got another game preview. Another Rider game preview. Because the Riders absolutely dominated the Red Blacks. The score doesn't show it. 31-20 in the East semifinal. That game wasn't that close. We'll talk about that in a little bit. We're going to talk about the Riders playing the Argos this upcoming Sunday in the East Final. We're going to host another Piffles playoff watch party at the Press Box. So if you came out last time or didn't come out last time and thought it looked pretty cool and it was a lot of fun, come out again. We're going to be doing the same thing. We'll talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk to Rider alum Jeff Fairholm.
I'm really excited for that one.
More players from the 89 Grey Cup team that we can talk to, the better. Because they've all been fantastic.
Yeah, I'm sitting there trying to think if there's been a bad one in the group, but nope.
No,
they've been great interviews.
They've all been great. So we're going to talk to Jeff Fairholm in just a little bit. We're going to take a look a little bit at the West Final, Edmonton at Calgary, Battle of Alberta, see who goes on to lose to the Riders in the Grey Cup. We'll have a rant and our Piffles picks. So let's get right down to it. 31-20, Riders beating Ottawa in Ottawa at TD Place for the right to face Toronto in the East Final. Before we get into, I have a whole bunch of things I want to talk about from this game. Before we get into that, Steve, immediate thoughts on this game.
I love that they came out hungry. I mean, right from the start, obviously, I unintentionally made a joke about hungry with breakfast for Bakari scoring the first touchdown. But, you know, they came out with intensity. They marched down the field on their first drive. We saw which Kevin Glenn we were going to get that game. It was a full team effort for 60 minutes. It was great.
That first drive, that's the first thing I've written down here. That very first drive the Riders had. What I love the most is that, obviously, the touchdown. That was obviously the best part about it.
So what do you love the second most?
The fact that they got Daron Carter involved right away. They got him the ball the very first throw. Get him involved, because we've seen what happens when he doesn't get the ball. He's just not the same type of player. If you get him involved in the game, whether it's a little screen pass, a little slant, if you're throwing it deep, doesn't matter. His effort level is higher. And he just seems more into the game if he's given a role right off the bat. Now, granted, he only had 5 catches for 51 yards the entire game. But the fact that they went to him right away kept him in it. And that was brilliant, I thought. The jet sweep to Chad Owens. We've seen it in all the games that he's been here so far. And it's worked damn near every time for a first down. And what I really liked is, and this was game planning, and you could see it right off the bat, they made a point of using the middle of the field. Little crossers, even the little slants going into the middle of the field. For whatever reason, Ottawa wasn't covering, and that showed on Bakari's touchdown. It was just a simple little, you know, 8-yard crossing route over the middle of the field. There was nobody there within 15 yards. Got a couple nice blocks, broke a tackle, and got himself another breakfast. So that first drive, I thought, was masterful. That was perfect. You couldn't have started a game any better, especially for a road team going into, you know, the defending Grey Cup champions home. And they were playing for a home Grey Cup, that start didn't get better. It couldn't have been better.
It set the tone for the entire game. It was a dominant start, and it basically showed, you used the word dominated, and that's what it was. And we walked down the field, we shoved the ball down their throats. And the one thing I liked was that they bounced back after we gave up the touchdown on the following drive with 2 plays to Deontay Spencer, who, I mean, all kudos to him. 800 plus yards in two games. That's ridiculous. And as a free agent, he's going to be rich this season. He has earned a healthy paycheck.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I don't care where he ends up. I don't want to see him facing the Riders.
Yeah, as long
he's
as
he's one of those that scares me the most in this league right now.
Out east. Yeah.
Yeah, stay out east, please. But they gave up the score, and what do we do on our next possession? March down the field again. And you know what? It looked, at that point, especially with Ottawa's next possession, like it was going to be a back and forth game. But we got to give a shout out to Sam McGuavin. That was the turning point to me.
Jumping that out route.
Yep.
Yeah, if they go back down there and score there,
it's a whole different ball game.
It's a whole different game.
Yep. It's very rare that you see a turning point that early in a game, but you could see it. It was just the field tilted 80% the other way for the rest of the game.
And what I found actually kind of cool, a little stat about the first couple drives, was that it was the first time in CFL playoff history that the first three drives of the game all resulted in touchdowns. And it all happened within, 6 or 7 minutes? And it was the fastest three touchdowns ever in CFL playoff history. So a little tidbit of information there. I thought that was kind of cool. Now, Ottawa's touchdown, Deontay Spencer, guy's fast. The guy's a burner. What I didn't like about that was there was no safety help for Casey Rogers. And Casey Rogers, I know I mentioned this last year, and he's been really good this year. And I know he's just coming back from his injury, and maybe he's not a full 100%. But all game long, Trevor Harris, Jerron Kreiner, and Deontay Spencer, they just picked on Rogers all game long. He was constantly in the trail position. He got beat deep a few times. A couple times were incomplete, but they had 2-3 steps on him. I don't want to sit here and nitpick because the Riders won 31-20 and it was pretty dominant. It, honestly, that score flattered Ottawa with how that game flow actually went. But that kind of worries me.
You can't have that kind of performance. You can get away with it against Trevor Harris, who was, considering he had 450 yards passing, he was off. Because there was two interceptions and there should have been five.
Yep.
Like, we dropped three. And we're not talking tough interceptions. These were in their chest interceptions. Like, yep. You're not going to get away with that against Ricky Ray.
No.
He overthrew a couple of guys. Ricky Ray doesn't do that. He's arguably the most accurate passer the league has ever seen.
Yep.
If we are going to walk out of BMO Field next week with a victory, Casey Rogers has to be better. There's no arguing that. He had a bad game.
Now, again, I do mention that there was no safety help over there. So scheme-wise, maybe that's something that we see a little bit different going into this Toronto game, having Mike Edom or Jeff Hecht, whoever's playing safety, have them maybe follow, I guess now it would be SJ Green a little bit more. But I would have liked to see them help out, especially after that first play once. And then they kept going back against throwing on Rodgers, and there just never seemed to be help for him. So I'm hoping that next week that kind of fixes itself, but I'm not going to go on about that. I mean, we won. It's just nitpicking now at this point.
Let's move away from nitpicking to the polar opposite about that. Let's talk about a guy who had a hell of a game. Marcus Thigpen.
Yeah, there's a big list of them. Marcus Thigpen, 169 yards rushing, the third most for a Rider player all time in the playoffs. Doesn't include Grey Cups, so I know a lot of people are saying, well, Corey Sheets had 197 in the Grey Cup in 2013. Yes, but the CFL doesn't actually count the Grey Cup as a playoff game. They count it separate. So in terms of semifinals and finals go, that was the third most all time behind George Reed and Corey Sheets from 2013 in the West Final, actually. His 75-yard run, that block by Namon Roosevelt, taking out Ottawa's DB, just perfect. And it not only took that guy out, it took another guy out who had to kind of leap over top. Once that hole was there, see ya.
And you know what? I'll admit I was a little concerned with the running back spot. Not because I'm not a fan of Marcus Thigpen. Obviously, he had a great game against Edmonton. He looks good. But we didn't have that bruiser running back that you usually need in the playoffs. Yeah, we didn't need it.
No.
I mean, he looked like he was going to break one every time he touched the ball.
Fresh legs.
And it was great. Yeah, you throw him and Chad Owens back there.
There's two guys that have very, very, very little wear on them this year.
I could watch Marcus Thigpen run all game. I mean, what was it, 15 carries, almost 170 yards.
Yep.
Even if you take out his 75-yard run, it's 14 for almost 95.
100. Yep.
I mean, even without a 75-yard run, that's great stats. He was the MVP to me.
Oh, he got the game ball from Javon Johnson in the locker room after the game. So yeah, he was absolutely fantastic. And the game plan, I thought, was great. Yep. to get him involved early and often. I mean, he out-carried Keenan LaFrance 15-4. And myself, I was thinking Keenan LaFrance would probably get the start just because of the whole ratio thing and just seeing how Brandon Labatt's injury would shake out just in terms of getting the correct amount of nationals on the field. And this team has to have import running backs. I don't know what they have to do with the rest of the roster to make the ratio work. I don't care, but they have to go with Thigpen and then Morris and LaFrance's backups, or else if Cam Marshall or Trent Richardson are ready to go.
Just one of them, yeah.
But Thigpen's got to be the guy.
Yeah, I think he's earned, obviously earned. I don't care who's healthy. He's got to start the East Final, 100%.
Yep.
Now, and against a team like Toronto with their rushing, you know, they actually have a pass rush. You need to be able to run the ball. So go Thigpen.
Yep. Now, another guy that absolutely dominated the game, and I've been personally pretty critical of him, and I thought he played probably his best game in 3 years, Dan Clark. And the rest of the offensive line was great, too. Again, that has a lot to do with Ottawa not really bringing a lot of pressure, but at the same time, they didn't allow him to, and the schemes, it was a lot of short passes, but it was designed that way to not allow the other team to get any kind of pressure. The O-line did their job. Run blocking was, again, phenomenal. So kudos to Dan Clark and the entire O-line. They won that game. Games are won in the trenches, and they won that battle.
And I saw you even tweeted at him, and added him.
I tagged him, yep. Yep.
Did he respond to that?
No, I'm actually surprised. He'd probably respond if I didn't, actually.
But yeah, it's hard to argue that the O-line was key to that victory, and they played great.
Kevin Glenn, we mentioned him a little bit. And I said on the Periscope after the game that, he was damn near perfect. Looking at the stats after, 18 of 28, not necessarily the best stat line, 64%, 250 yards and a touchdown. But it didn't seem like that. There was like three or four drops and a couple by Chad Owens that he should have had. Those are catches that Owens makes in his sleep most of the time.
And those were not short drops either.
No, but I thought, again, it was game plan. It was short stuff. Get the ball into the playmakers' hands and let them do the job, and that's exactly what they did.
It was what was working pre Labor Day, all the short stuff. You're absolutely right. You look back to before he got hurt, we didn't go deep all that often, but we burned teams with crosses, slants, everything over the middle, and for some reason we seem to go away from that over the last 6, 7, 8 weeks. Worked great on Sunday,
and there was two throws. Or 15 yards the entire game. One was a double coverage throw up to Bakari Grant, and then one of the passes to Chad Owens that he didn't catch. Two passes over 15 yards. That's it. Everything else was short stuff.
Meanwhile, I'm fairly certain Trevor Harris had two passes that were under 15 yards.
I don't know. There was a lot of little checkdowns from him, but yeah, it was just, you know what? And clock management. Like, that's what that was. That was all about controlling the time of possession, and the Riders did that for, you know, 3.5 quarters.
And I said it when I mentioned that first drive right from the start. You could see that Kevin Glenn had it. He had that, and there was a lot of talk about this going into this game, that Kevin Glenn has that veteran presence. Trevor Harris has never started a playoff game, and people were going, well, what about Brandon Bridge? Why isn't he playing? We saw why.
Well, and that's interesting too, because since the Banjo Bowl, when Kevin Glenn's hand got hurt, only three games since then, Kevin Glenn has played the full game. All three of those games against Ottawa.
That's weird.
All the other games, Brent Bridge played in or started, like the Hamilton game. And I think a lot of that has to do with the pressure facing the Riders' O-line and the offense from the opposing D-line. Ottawa didn't get much pressure.
They haven't gotten much pressure all year.
And that's why we're seeing that Kevin Glenn was upright and he had time to operate, and 31 points is the result of that. The last game against Toronto, he was pulled. The offense did nothing for a quarter and a half because there was pressure on Kevin Glenn. So that worries me going into this East Final. Is our O-line, who played a hell of a game, are they going to be able to do that again? And we'll talk a little bit about that coming up when we talk about the East Final, but just something to kind of wonder about. So I mean, obviously they're going to have Brandon Ridge ready to play. I'm assuming that they did for this game as well, just in case. So it's kind of funny that Kevin Glenn, the ultimate insurance plan, isn't the insurance plan for this team. A little role reversal near the tail end of his career, which is kind of a funny little turn of events, but.
Speaking of reversals, can we talk about that reverse trick play?
And something like that you can only do once a year.
And it was perfectly timed. And it was great.
Loved having Chad Owens and Christian Jones back there.
Yep.
We have four guys that can return the ball.
And if one of them goes down, yeah, Marcus Thigpen steps in.
Greg Morris is there too, and he's looked good.
What a group, what's the word? Disgusting amount of riches. I can't think of the right phrase, but let's go with that.
We'll go with that.
Like, you have four legitimate deep threats. When was the last time, and I asked this on Twitter last week, when was the last time we had a legitimate deep threat at returner?
Yeah, we have four guys now that could take it.
And the name that kept coming up was Corey Holmes.
Yep.
That's a long time ago. I mean, you know, we have four. And Greg Morris doesn't give me that he'll break it every time, but he gives me that 20, 30-yard return, which most teams would take that in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
But Thigpen and Jones and Owens are all legitimate. Every time they return a kick, it's a potential touchdown. And I used to consider getting up for pee breaks as kicks were happening, because we just don't see kick return touchdowns in Saskatchewan. You can't do that anymore. You got to time your pee breaks and your drink breaks a whole lot better.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chris Jones.
Coverage, though, on special teams, I thought was kind of iffy here and there. I mean, again, going up against Deontay Spencer, who's had a whale of a last few games, that'll be something that needs to be shored up a little bit better as well. I mean, guarantee that the team's not happy with how they did.
They didn't give up 500 yards. Like was it the Ticats? But the writer, I mean, in retrospect, they only gave up 300 all-purpose yards to Deontay Spencer. But you're absolutely right. Like, as soon as we score on our first drive, Spencer's kick return ends up on our side of the field or just before. That's a little terrifying.
97 yards.
And that's been our strong point all year, has been special teams coverage. Well, special teams on both sides of the ball, but we have not given up that long return very much all year. And it was a little scary. They're going to need to shore that up for sure.
Another thing I want to give kind of a shout out here too, and this isn't to a player. This is, and maybe it should be to all the players, but also to the refs. Penalties. There were basically none. There were three penalties called all game that were accepted. All of them were against the Riders. Two of them were intentional time count penalties. One where they tried to draw them offside on the fake field goal, which they ended up punting.
And they did draw them offside.
Eh, that's iffy.
Our O-line didn't jump.
Yeah, exactly. If the O-line moves, then, you know, then they'll call it. Then you can call it offside. But you're allowed to do that in the CFL, jump over the line and jump back if the offense doesn't move or ball isn't snapped. And then there was the one offside against Rakeem Cox. But that was it.
You know why? Because it wasn't Al Bradbury.
I love that they just let the players decide that game. Unless it was blatantly obvious, which an offside is, or a time count. I mean, you have to call those. They let them play. And there was a lot of times that I thought, you know, on a couple of the deep balls that Ottawa threw, oh, great, there's pass interference there, because the DBs were right there when the ball was there. So I was like, great, there's going to be a flag. Not once the entire time.
I don't remember the last time I saw a game like that in the CFL.
And we mentioned that in the last show, that the game against Edmonton, they were just not disciplined, and they shored that up pretty damn quick, and that definitely helped out.
It certainly makes a huge difference in field position, if nothing else.
You know who had fun? Chris Jones. I mean, except for the whole camera incident where the TSN cameraman went in front of him while he was trying to give third down signal signs to his defense.
Well, that was stupid on the cameraman's on side.
Yeah, it was.
If there's ever a time to get out of the coach's way, it's probably when he's sending in signals to his defense. But
give him the benefit of the doubt. He's not paying attention to signals and stuff. He's just doing what he's told from his producer.
But he definitely was having a lot of fun on the sidelines.
He was smiling on Thigpen's touchdown. Big giant grin on his face. Hands up in the air, you know, fist pump and everything. He was having fun. And that's a side of Chris Jones that we normally don't see.
Probably helps that he wasn't a frozen popsicle like the week before.
So I love seeing Chris Jones have fun there, and that was, I mean, obviously it comes when you're winning, so nothing better than that. Hopefully he's smiling a lot more this upcoming week. And one other thing I want to mention is the defense, just as a whole. Now, they did give up a lot of passing yards, 457. 200-plus of those were in the fourth quarter with the game pretty much out of reach. I thought they played well, even though the stats, if you look at just the stat sheet, it doesn't necessarily look like they played that well, but they did. They had the two interceptions, turnover on downs, fumble recoveries. Like, they forced turnovers. They should have, like you mentioned, should have had another three picks. They, other than that first drive and then that very last drive near the end, they held Ottawa to a couple field goals. They got their turnovers, and I thought they played a hell of a game.
outside of the nitpicking against Casey Rogers, that was a great, great team effort from the entire linebacker unit and defensive backs. To me, and look here, you got written down the pressure from the D-line. There wasn't a lot there.
I'd like to see a little bit more.
That's been the case all season long, but
I also think in this game that was scheme wise, yeah, and game planning as well, because they didn't want to get beat one on one deep by Trevor Harris, who throws a good deep ball. So it'll be interesting to see how they do, what they plan on doing against Toronto, because we've seen that Ricky Ray, you give him time. If you're going to play three man rush and drop into zone, he'll pick that apart. And if you go man, if you get the pressure on him, he's off. He's still going to get his. I mean, he's first ballot Hall of Famer for a reason. But if you can limit those deep passes to guys like SJ Green that are going one-on-one on post patterns, if you can hit Ricky Ray, that's a totally different team. So hopefully this game, they scheme a little bit different, bring a little bit more pressure, a little bit more blitzes, get to Ricky Ray, and we'll see what happens there.
You know, there is one thing I got to say, and it kind of shocked me going through the end of that game. The one thing that surprised me more than anything else, we said it in our show, there's that possibility that Chris Jones outcoaches himself. Am I wrong in thinking Rick Campbell outcoached himself? You have a guy like William Powell, who, in my opinion, was the best running back in the CFL this year when he played. And they ended up getting away from him. He had 8 carries all game long. And 8 for 50 yards.
Like, he had a good average.
Like, you got a running back who's averaging 5-6 yards a carry in 3 games against the Riders, and you get away from that, instead throwing a CFL record 60 passes in a playoff game. Why? Especially when you can see right from the start that Trevor Harris was not on. There was something missing there. To me, it looked like Campbell definitely outcoached himself. I don't mind. I like it. I hope Tressman does the same thing next week. But when we've talked about the Riders' one weakness has been stopping the run, and even in games where they haven't given up a ton of yards, they've given up a lot of yards per carry.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they had 11 carries all game.
Yeah, Ottawa just got away from it, and it was just constant pass after pass after pass. And one other note from that game, roster news. We found out just before the game, Chris Getzlaff actually got on the active roster. They took off Marc-Olivier Briette, moved him to the one-game injured list. So a little bit of a surprising move there. And I thought the reason why they would do this is to get Getzlaff on the field, maybe for Daron Carter on running plays, so that they could get Thigpen in and just work up the ratio that way. I don't think he saw the field at all. I don't remember seeing Getzlaff on the field. Maybe he got on special teams, but at least on offense, he didn't.
Yeah, I can't pick out a single moment where I remember seeing him. But
so now I'm thinking, if you're going to have him on the roster again against Toronto, what role does he play? Because if he's just playing special teams, Marc-Olivier Briette, you'd think would play over him, right?
There are better players to put in that spot if it is just special teams, for sure.
And John Murphy said there'll be a couple of surprise roster moves this week, so who knows what that means. I don't know if that means, Richardson or Marshall's back. I don't know if that means, Getzlaff is going to start. Who knows with this team?
Here's a question for you. Brendan Labatt comes back. What do you do with the O-line? Because you don't move. Dennis had a great game.
Mm-hmm.
You don't touch those imports. Diakowski's been great all season long. Do you put Labatt at center and call it a day? Or do you move back to 3 non-imports?
No, because Clark will still start at center. I think he's...
Like, obviously, if Labatt is healthy, 100% he plays. He's our best O-lineman by far. But what do you do?
I think you sit Dennis. I think you have him as a backup. I don't know what else to do. Just because of the ratio and the numbers game, the more Canadians you can have on the O-line, the better your overall team's going to be skill players-wise when you have a lot of those Americans that you don't have to, have designated imports or sitting Caleb Hawley. Hawley's going to sit again this week. But if Labatt could play, I don't think he will. But if he can, yeah, he starts over Derek Dennis, and maybe Dennis is a scratch, which is crazy to think about because the guy's the reigning offensive lineman of the year.
Never would have guessed that 6 months ago.
And can't even get on the roster because of a passport.
Insane.
It's one of those quirky CFL rules that you only see in the CFL.
But this also looks back to the crazy depth we've seen in Saskatchewan over the last, like the change over the last year and a half.
Yeah, that was last year I thought that our starters were fine. There was just no depth, and once injuries hit, That's when the team, you know, wasn't playing well. This year we have that depth, and it's showing, and they can plug and play just about anybody into this roster, and there's and they succeed. You notice any injuries?
Not really, no.
Because I know Chad Owens went down on a kind of a BS knee to the back of his head.
Oh yeah,
on the sidelines by the Ottawa defender, kind of turned, made Owens go, you know, the wrong way, I guess, and just kind of contort his body a little bit. I don't know, might have been a groin injury or something. He ended up coming in later on in the game, and actually I remember seeing that watching the game. Has Owens come back yet? And then there was that punt reverse trick play the very next play. So
and he looked, I mean, all right.
and he was in for the rest of the game. So this is the first time in a long time that there hasn't been an injury pretty much at all.
Yeah, knock on wood, we came out of that pretty unscathed. Anytime you can get through a playoff game without any major injuries,
that's a win in itself.
That's a win for sure. Can we do it again, please?
Another full healthy
knock on wood.
Another full healthy team against Toronto, and hopefully that includes LeBlatt. We'll see what happens with that. But let's talk about that game. The East Final coming up this Sunday, 12:00 again. We're going to be watching that at the press box here in Regina again. So if you want to come out, watch the game with us. There are a few spots available still. Just send us a note on Twitter at PifflesPod. There's a Facebook event page for it, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. Get to that. Send us a message on there if you want to join in. Have some fun. Again, $3 drinks, 40-cent wings. I had a good time. I thought it was great.
I think I had a good time.
You had a good time. Trust me. It was your birthday. So happy belated birthday, by the way. And yeah.
Riders gave me a good present. I'll take that.
You got exactly what you wanted.
Yep.
Well, except for at the end of the game, but apparently that's something for later.
We'll come back to that.
So this game against Toronto, we've mentioned Ricky Ray. Obviously, get pressure on him is the way to stop him. He's one of those classic cliche, you can't stop him, you can only hope to contain him, because you know he's going to get, you know, a couple deep balls, and that's what he does. That he's like that in every single game. He's going to hit that, you know, 20, 30-yard post to, you know, SJ Green, Armani Edwards, Jeff Fuller, doesn't matter. He's going to hit that, and we know that, but it's limiting how many times that happens. What are your keys to winning this game?
Score more points.
See, I thought you'd say give up less points.
No, this is gonna be a high scoring affair.
You think so?
This is two really good offenses.
This is two good defenses.
It's two good teams.
And Toronto's been playing a lot better, even though they're just a 9-9 team. They're first place in the East for a reason, and they've been playing well in the back half of the year, just like the Riders.
To me, it comes down to. And I think this has been my key to the game every game since Labor Day. Stop the run. Stop James Wilder Jr.
And they, I don't want to say they stopped him last time they played in Toronto. Held him to, I think it was like 50 yards rushing. He had 80 yards receiving as well. So, I mean, overall he had 130 yards. Still a pretty good game. But he didn't really break that long one that he's been known to do this year. And I'm with you. It's James Wilder Jr.
Because you're right. We all know Ricky Ray is going to get 300 passing yards. It's just...
That's a given.
As much a given as the sun's going to come up tomorrow, Ray will get 300 yards. It's just what happens in the CFL. There's a reason, like you've said, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's the most consistent quarterback of our time. You can't stop him. So you have to stop everything around him. And with the lack of pressure from our D-line lately, you got to stop the run. And you got to get pressure. That's what it comes down to me. That winning it, we got to win the trenches.
And offense, that's the keys for me as well, is just time of possession. That's the big thing. Be able to run the ball, control the ball, keep the ball away from Ricky Ray. That's it. If they don't have the ball, they can't score.
Well, and I look back, and I'm just sitting here looking over the last time we played Toronto in October there. We didn't have a legitimate running threat at that point. We had Keenan LaFrance at 38 yards, Trent Richardson at 20 yards. We were 100% a passing team. They haven't really seen us as a dual threat yet. So I'm not sure if they're prepared. Well, I hope they'd be prepared.
You'd think so.
At this point in the season.
It's a Mark Trestman coach team.
They will be prepared, but they haven't seen that from us yet. And we are 2-0 against them this year.
Outscored them by 7 points a game each time that we, you know, on average.
I mean, when it comes down to it, if we can actually have a legitimate rushing threat and give Kevin Glenn the time to pass the ball, if he plays as well as he did on Sunday against Ottawa, I like our chances. And the key to that is actually giving him time.
Otherwise, we're going to see Brendan Bridge, but look what happened last time Bridge played against Toronto. He came back and won that game for us. Things weren't looking all that well, and he came in and rattled off a whole bunch of points in a row.
How excited is Sean Lemon going to be for this game?
Yeah, he'll be pretty...
Former Rider alum.
Pretty amped about that. Once a Rider, always a Rider. Right? Yeah. Corey Chamberlain's defense.
Just don't ask him about it if you're from Regina.
Like, there's a couple good storylines. What I actually like, and I'm going to bring up a couple things here, and I mentioned this on Twitter, actually, at RealAlexD, cheap plug. We have a Riders team that is coming off a fairly massive rebuild over 2 years, and you have a Toronto Argonauts team who didn't have a GM or a head coach a week into free agency. And one of those two teams is going to represent in the Grey Cup. So I just think kind of the turnaround. Nobody thought, realistically, nobody else in the CFL gave the Riders a chance this year.
Yeah,
we were homers for picking them for 10 wins. And, I mean, we all saw how good this team could be last year when they had their four-game win streak. We knew the seeds were planted. And, I mean, obviously with the additions that they made this year, there was only nowhere to go but up. Toronto, we all had them pegged at last.
Nobody was afraid of Toronto going into this year.
And then the whole getting rid of Jim Barker right before free agency starts, and then not having... I mean, we talked to Derek Dennis earlier this year, and he said he would have signed in Toronto if they had a GM or a coach. But he went in there in free agency and saw that they clearly didn't have a plan at the time, and he said nope, and he signed here. So for that team to kind of turn it around from where, you know, that... And that was, you know, just a day into free agency. To turn that around, obviously getting Jim Popp and Mark Trestman, when those guys are together, magic happens, right? Like, we've seen that in history. It's going to happen. But for them to do what they've done this year is actually really impressive. And I don't think they get enough credit for it. Probably because they finished 9-9. If they would have finished 11-7, we'll say, they'd probably get a lot more props than they do right now.
Once that team that Trestman and Pop put together gelled, they've been... I mean, the six teams that made the playoffs were the six hottest teams going into the playoffs. All of them had played well. Toronto, what were they down the stretch? Was it 6-4?
6-4, something like that. Yeah.
I mean, they played like a 10-8 team, 11-7 team down the stretch. They are a solid football team.
Mm-hmm.
And they are well-rounded. They've got great players on... Can we talk about getting SJ Green? Was it for a sixth-round pick?
Jeez. I mean...
This game is loaded with players that Montreal thought were done. I mean...
Sorry, Cliff.
Sorry, not sorry. Thanks for the cast-offs. They've been okay.
Bear Woods.
Right? Daron Carter.
Yep.
Javon Johnson. You want to talk about a storyline? This is basically the 2016 Montreal Alouettes.
Facing off against each other.
Right?
Sprinkling a couple players here and there.
That shows you exactly what a solid GM and coach will do. You take whatever it is Montreal has and what they've more or less pissed away to other teams. And look what Toronto and Saskatchewan gain from that kind of thing, having quality people up at the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a nice feeling to be on the right side of that.
Yeah, it's not very often the Riders actually win in history on that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's a nice change.
Again, sorry, Cliff.
The other thing I wanted to bring up was just kind of, you know, we have the schedule written behind us. And we don't really notice this, and we kind of put it together. You did last week. To get to the Grey Cup, once the Riders knew that they were crossing over, they had to go to Ottawa and then Toronto. That's what happened September 29th, and then October 7th, the Riders went to Ottawa and Toronto, and then the Riders had a home game against Ottawa.
Going to be very similar.
The Riders won both those games, just like they're going to do this year in the playoffs, and then they'll have a home game. Instead of against Ottawa, it'll just be in Ottawa for the Grey Cup.
How great is that? You know what I really want? Not because I want the Riders to win, but we all saw Edmonton's comments about our locker room. How great will it be being the crossover team with the home locker room while they have to suffer through the visitor locker room?
We'll see if it complains about the visitors' locker room in Ottawa. We saw them in the TSN at halftime. They showed a couple of players in the dressing room just kind of sitting down, and they were just locker stalls, and then
what do you want?
Had a bench. They look comfortable. There's enough room for them. It would look like a good visitor locker room to me.
Next time we plan a stadium, let's make sure and deck out the visitor locker room just like the home one. Just make sure they feel right at home. That seems like a great recipe for victory.
The new university, I think it's the University of Texas, locker rooms. Oh, I saw this on Twitter. It came up in my feed, and I just they spent $7 million just on the home locker room. And so TV is above every player's locker. They went with stainless steel lockers instead of the traditional wood lockers, try to help with the smell, because obviously, you know, dude's sweating and it doesn't smell very nice in locker rooms. Vents in there as well in each individual locker to help with the smell, and just the amenities that were in there. Oh man, it looked nice. I've been inside the Ryder locker room. That's a nice locker room. This one at, you know, I'm pretty sure it was Texas, but this was a nice locker room.
That's what happens when you don't have to pay your players.
And that just got me thinking, I wonder what their visitor locker rooms are like.
Probably exactly the same as ours.
Exactly.
Like every other stadium in football. Sports. Like, teams don't plan for their visitors to be comfortable.
No, you make them as comfortable as possible. They're coming into your house. You show them who's boss.
Be glad that you have a locker stall, a bench, and occasionally air conditioning.
Only if you're playing in Saskatchewan when it's 35 degrees outside. But I just thought that was kind of a funny little thing that they showed the Ottawa locker room, and the Riders seemed fine. Maybe it's because they were winning. I don't know.
I don't know, because Edmonton won that game too.
Yeah. So
they just needed something to bitch about.
Yeah. But it'll be one hell of a game here against Toronto. I think I picked this past game against Ottawa as a pretty close game. I thought it was going to be a field goal game. Came down to whoever got the ball last. Thankfully, it wasn't. This one is going to be a close game. But let's let somebody else talk a little bit about it, and we'll talk a little bit more about other kind of football memories and take you down memory lane. We're joined this week on the line by Ryder alum, 89 Grey Cup champion, Jeff Fairholm. Jeff, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, guys. How you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Now, first off, you still follow the Riders. From the outside, what do you think of the turnaround of the Riders this season after obviously two tough years in 2015 and 2016?
Well, I think the turnaround's been fantastic. The way they played this past weekend, I thought was, you know, very inspired football. They came out guns blazing and just played very, very well. They were aggressive. They did all the right things, and it seems like they've cleaned up a lot of their mistakes. You know, so it looks like they're gelling and they're getting hot at the right time. Compared to the other years, you know, they've got the talent now that can carry them to where they need to be.
So going into a tough game in Toronto, what do the Riders need to do to earn a berth to the Grey Cup?
I think they need to do pretty much what they did last week. You know, come in with a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of energy, and just, you know, play sound football. The big thing that they did really well last week was they didn't turn the ball over. You can't turn the ball over in the playoffs, and you just can't do it in an opposing team's field. So, you know, I think if they hold on to the ball and if they're on the plus side of the turnover ratio, I think they'll be just fine.
Now, you obviously prep for a bunch of playoff games in your career. How much different was it prepping for the playoffs than just a regular season game?
You know, you don't really prep any differently. You've seen the teams before, you know, at least twice, depending on who you're playing. So, you know, nothing has really changed a lot other than getting healthy. You know, two things. You need to get healthy, and you need to understand that the speed of the game increases significantly. So if you go into the game thinking, you know, it's another football game, well, you're going to be sadly going to be woken up very quickly, because the speed of the game increases dramatically in a playoff game. It's just the sense of urgency is so much greater.
Now, you played the last few years of your career in Toronto, so you've got kind of a personal look at that team. What does the league need to do to get fans more engaged in Toronto?
Well, that's a million-dollar question. Maybe I should have applied for the commissioner if I knew that answer. I think, you know, I don't know. I was involved with Bob Nicholson when he was our president in Toronto, and he had asked me my thoughts on it, and I always thought they needed to get out of the Sky Dome at the time and get into a smaller field. And here they are at BMO Field, which is a smaller field, seems perfect for the CFL, and, you know, they're still not drawing fans. So I honestly don't know. I just think Toronto may be just too big for the CFL, and you know, maybe they just need to come to grips with the fact that they're going to get, you know, at best 20,000 fans a game. And, you know, it's a big sports market with, you know, basketball, baseball, and especially hockey. It's just so big that, you know, I'm afraid that the Argonauts are just going to be continually lost to the shuffle.
Now, what was sweeter for you, winning the Grey Cup in 1989 with a relatively new team to you anyway, or with the veteran team in 1996?
Oh, come on, you know.
So Toronto, right?
Well, even if I had played in the game in 1996, I would always say that the Grey Cup for me in 1989 was a far greater thrill. Coming, being in a smaller market where, it's your only pro team in an entire province and having not won it for so many years, and it was only my second year in the league. I mean, there's nothing, and arguably the best breakup game ever played. So, it would have had to be pretty special at that time. And, it was nice to be part of that team. But, I didn't actually play in the game because I had hurt my back, which caused me to retire that year. So it certainly doesn't mean nearly as much as it as the 89 Grey Cup did.
Outside of the Grey Cup games, what was the highlight of your playing career?
Oh, there's bits and pieces that I sort of look to, personal accomplishments I look to, but to me it's more the fun nature of some games that I've played in. The Labor Day games were always special. Some other games like the first time that there was a U.S. I think we called it the U.S. invasion when I think it was Sacramento came into Taylor Field. That atmosphere was like a Labor Day game. It was very much a U.S. college atmosphere. Those types of things, playing with some great players who we've remained very close over the years. So, it's those types of things. I point obviously to the Grey Cup and the catch that I had and 170-yard touchdown and those kind of things. But it's the camaraderie that I miss the most of having a bunch of really good friends in a locker room and the joking around before and that kind of thing. But that's what I remember most.
Now you mentioned Taylor Field in there. About a month ago, they finally brought down the west grandstands there of Taylor Field. Is there anything about that stadium that you'll actually miss?
Yeah, actually, you'd be surprised. I'm a traditionalist when it comes especially to the CFL. My father played, I grew up in the CFL, so my father played for 8 years at Montreal, and I hung around that. I was a locker room rat from when I was born. And Taylor Field, I actually do miss it. I would miss it a lot. It's nice to go into a brand new stadium, and but we were cozy there. I mean, we got treated pretty well. We didn't lack for anything. Although I guess you could look at the new stadium and say, boy, if we'd only known then what we know now, I guess we would have lacked for a lot. But it was a different time frame. But I'll miss Taylor Field a lot. There's a lot of great memories from that old stadium.
Now you mentioned camaraderie and the like. We don't want you to throw teammates under the bus, unless, of course, you want to name names and that kind of thing. Is there any particular road trip story that stands out? Something on the road that was just, stands out after your career?
Yeah, well, talking in public, I can't say too much. I can't come up with my better ones. But I remember one time when there was a practical joke that Ridgeway and Suter played on Aldag and Poley, so that Aldag and Poley were in one room and Suter and Ridgeway were in another one, and something had happened, and they got Ridgeway and Suter got the key for Poley and Aldag's room, and they ended up taking all of the furniture out of the room and hiding it in a storage area when they were out to dinner. So when they came back, there was literally nothing in the room, like not even a picture on the wall. And I can't remember where it was, but it was one of the funniest practical jokes I've ever seen.
My favorite part about that is we've actually had Dave Ridgeway and Roger Aldag on the show before, and they've both mentioned the exact same incident.
Oh, is that right?
Well, so apparently that one was a good one.
I've corroborated it for you.
Earlier this season, you actually had a little a Twitter bar with Daron Carter. Obviously, you said you're a traditionalist, hand the ball to the ref when you score, act like you've been there before. What's your take just on general, not necessarily on Daron Carter, but just in general about guys, throwing this touchdown celebrations? We saw Ottawa doing the limbo, which was actually kind of fun the other day.
I don't care about that. I've said publicly since I had that little Twitter war. It was a timing thing, and Twitter's kind of, and I've been barred from Twitter from my family, so, it's one of those things. It was a timing thing. I said something about how he reacted, or what he did actually when he stepped out of bounds, which I don't, I just don't agree with. But as far as touchdown celebrations or a big thing in a game, you know what? Have fun. Times have changed. I'm old. You know, we celebrated too, but not to that. And that we didn't celebrate to the point where, you know, we would have had to practice it or come up with something. You know, we should practice this stuff in order to come up with some of these things. Times are different. Let them have fun. It's a big play. I think what I have trouble with is when, you know, somebody catches a, you know, second and 10 yard pass, and they, you know, catch it for 7 yards and they get all excited because they got to, because they caught a ball. I mean, that's what I have trouble with. You know, do your job. You know, I was watching the Winnipeg Edmonton game on the weekend and I saw Dressler scored. Yes, they were losing, but, you know, Dressler runs in the end zone, throws the ball to the ref and runs off the field. That's my kind of guy. That doesn't mean it's right for the fans of today. So if it is what it is, let them have fun. Okay.
Now, I think a lot of that has to do, again, like you said, today's day and age and, you know, social media and just trying to make your presence known online. Is there somebody on the 1989 Grey Cup team that if they were playing now would throw down celebrations like that and just make it all about them for that moment?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I've been, it's been said that Narcisse might have done that, but, you know, he did a little jig, whatever he did. I don't know what he called it. you know, he did that, but it certainly wasn't about him, knowing that, but like I do. I don't think so. I honestly think it just was a different day and age. I think that if anybody had done that and gotten over the line, I think they would have been dealt with in the locker room appropriately.
If you can, big game coming up Sunday. What's your score prediction?
Score prediction. I actually think that the Riders, if they can come in with the energy that they had last time, I know they're going to have a good game plan. They'll be ready. I think the Riders are going to win, and I think it's going to be a relatively high-scoring game. I think it's going to be like 42-36.
That'll make for some exciting football.
I'm hoping. I'm going to watch. I got nothing else to do Saturday.
Well, Mr. Fairholm, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime. You know, you have my number.
There is former Rider receiver, 1989 and 1996 Grey Cup champion, Jeff Fairholm. And I'll always remember watching, you know, I was 3 in the 89 Grey Cup game, so I don't remember. Apparently, I was probably sleeping, I bet. And I was 3 years old, and it was probably like 8 o'clock. That was my bedtime, right? Like, watching that game now, 1989, even knowing what happens, to me, that is still the best Grey Cup game ever played, possibly the best football game I've ever seen. And that has nothing to do with the outcome and who won. Like, bias aside, that was a phenomenal game. And the drama that was in it, Hamilton's catch at the end, the kick, obviously, and just the amount of big plays that were in that game. Jeff Fairholm had a massive long touchdown in that game too. Like, it was just a fantastic game, and I don't think you'll find a better game than that one.
I've racked my brain trying to think of one, and nope. I can still sit down. I'm not one to rewatch past football games. Once I know the score of a game, I get bored easily. That game I could watch 100 times and love it every time. And again, not because the Riders won, but because it's
that
just
helps.
It absolutely does. I probably wouldn't watch. I imagine Ticats fans don't watch it 100 times. But I mean, it from a football standpoint, it was just everything you could ask for in a championship game. I hope we're blessed with a similar game this year.
Hopefully one that doesn't keep us on the edge of our seats that much. For our team, anyway.
As long as we win, I hope it does.
Yeah. I'd rather blow out myself. I mean, we all remember 2013. That game sucked to watch on TV after, but hey, for us in the stands there, that was the greatest game of all time. So I'd be okay with another. I'd be okay with another game like that.
Yeah, when you mention it that way, okay. Yeah, if the Riders are in the Grey Cup, blow out, please.
Now moving along here, we mentioned that you know, no Amy this week. So what does that do for the Hottie Bowl? Well, we've seen before that when we get in charge of the Hottie Bowl, fun things happen. We've been told no, you guys aren't allowed to do anything, so we'll actually abide by the rules. Even though we have nobody supervising us this week, Amy will announce her Hottie Bowl on Twitter this week, so we'll let her do the Hottie Bowl. We're already on it, so we don't have to worry about not getting on it.
Once we've nominated Daltz and us,
we're set.
Yeah, we can only go downhill from there, so let's let Amy, you know.
We'll let her handle that. So follow her on Twitter at CFL Hottie Bowl. Send her suggestions. She's always looking to do some research on the Hottie Bowl. So if you have any suggestions on, you know, a good looking guy that plays football and, you know, maybe even plays it pretty well, send her a suggestion.
Now, speaking of Amy, I got to go off.
Let's get ready to rumble!
So I got to throw a little rant aimed at one of my fellow co-hosts. Sunday afternoon, sitting at the press box for the Piffles playoff watch party. Happened to be my second 32nd birthday. And as is often the case, with when it's your birthday and you're out in a big group, shots were set up in front of me randomly throughout the game. I'm never one to turn down a shot. I love free booze. Booze is great. Especially when watching football. Grey Cup's coming around. This was great practice. So late in the game, my dear friend Amy walks over with a shot in her hand. Now, I'd had a few drinks at this point, and most of the shots were pretty good. They were, you know, your typical birthday shots. There wasn't anything too, you know, overly cruel. She walks up and goes, "Here, Steve, have one more. Happy birthday." Me. Oh, God, what is it? Because I don't trust it. I assume it's going to be bad. Her. It's an apple pie shot. Ask anybody there. My face lit up. I was excited. I was pumped. I love apple pie shots. They're absolutely delicious. And if you're gonna get me drunk, it might as well taste good. So what do? Unlike every other shot I got that game, I don't even think about it. I don't take a sniff. I just pound it back. My face went from excited to disappointment faster than the Red Blacks got scored on. Straight shot of tequila. Now, I'm not against tequila. I can handle tequila. I don't mind it. But when you're expecting something like an apple pie shot, and you toss down a shot of tequila, it's a dick move, Amy. It's a dick move. And remember, your birthday's on Wednesday. I've got a whole week and a half to plan revenge.
At Grey Cup, too.
And you know it's coming, and you won't know when. That's all. Just wanted to get that one off my chest.
Let me pull back the curtains a little bit here. When Amy was like, hey, we'll get Steve a shot. Yeah, okay. Let's get him something disgusting. All right, sure. The whole time she's like, well, what should we get him? I said, well, you know, we could do the traditional birthday thing and, you know, get him a Muff Diver. Not the best shot, but definitely not the worst. She found the worst shot. You didn't get it, though, luckily. She found a shot that was 2 ounces of vodka and then soy sauce to taste. I think it was called Black Death. So you're welcome. I talked her out of that because she was going to ask about that. Vodka and soy sauce.
There was a high chance if you order me that Black Death ends up all over everybody around me like the plague.
So she ends up finding the shot. And she says, we could just get him tequila. And she's like, oh, we'll make it look like an apple pie shot. And we'll sprinkle some cinnamon on it. So she gets the waitress to do that. And the waitress brings it over. And this is from my vantage point, you know, a couple seats over. The waitress brings it over to you, puts it down. You're like, oh, God, another shot. Thanks a lot, Amy. And then the waitress said, it's an apple pie shot. Steve, ooh, apple pie. Face lights up. Like you said, you tossed it back. And it wasn't instantaneous either. It took a second after you put the shot glass down. And about that much time went by. Your face soured. And you're like, that was not apple pie. Nope, it was tequila.
And you know what? Solid touch on throwing a little cinnamon on top, because that's what made me not take a little sniff test. It looked exactly right. Well done, Amy. Dick move, but well done.
And I guess, Amy, yours is coming.
I'm probably not going to be as nice. I don't have you over my shoulder going, it's probably not the best idea.
It'll be our first day at Grey Cup.
I won't be that
on her
cruel.
Birthday, but we'll see what happens.
I'm not overly cruel. There will be no Black Death, I promise.
She would probably just throw it at you, actually, is what she would do. All right. Now, moving on here. We'll talk a little bit about the West Final. Obviously, the Riders are playing in the East Final. We've talked about their game against Toronto coming up. Edmonton at Calgary. Now, a couple of points I want to make about this. Obviously, the Riders are going to play the winner of this because the Riders are going to win against Toronto. So this is important to the Riders. Calgary hasn't played a meaningful game in about 6 weeks. After they clinched first, they had a bye week. They had a game where they started Andrew Buckley and then had their backup quarterback in after that. Didn't play Bo Levi Mitchell. And we see this every year with Calgary. They get first place. They have it locked up early. And then November comes around. They haven't played in about a month with all their starters. And they don't have it. Is this something we're going to see again?
You know, I gotta say, Calgary has not looked good at all lately. Not even a little bit. You have to remind, what was the question? Because all I was thinking about was how bad they look.
Will Calgary have it?
No, I don't think so. Nothing about what they've done lately makes me think they are a football team that's prepared for a West final. They have gotten progressively worse, and something is off with Bo Levi Mitchell. He just hasn't looked right. That game against us.
They're saying this is rotator cuff.
That might be the worst game I've seen him play in the CFL.
And he doesn't play bad games.
And it's been considered, just nothing about that team seems to be rolling at the right time. The last thing you want to do going into the playoffs, A, 6 weeks without meaningful football, but B, going in on a 3-game losing streak. You look at the rest of the teams involved in the playoffs right now, they're all coming into the playoffs hot. They're riding huge momentum swings.
Edmonton's the hottest team in the league.
Yep. And look at them right now. They've been on fire for the last, what, 6 games?
Yep.
Nothing from the last few weeks has shown me that Calgary should be the favorite in this game. I don't care that they've got, 13-4-1. They just don't look good.
And that's one of those burdens of finishing first, and especially getting out to a 13-1-1 start. For whatever reason in the CFL, finishing first never seems to work. I shouldn't say never. It does happen often, but it just not as often as it should, where you only have to win one home game to get to the championship game. That's always a tough one because you're not playing for a couple weeks. The other team has all the momentum from the semifinal. And you mentioned it, going against the hottest team in the league right now, playing against probably the most outstanding player this year, Mike Riley.
And
normally, and people that know me normally know ABC, anybody but Calgary. So I would want Edmonton in this one. I want Calgary to win this game, probably because it's going to be easier for the Riders in the Grey Cup. Because if there's one team that scares me, it's Edmonton.
Yeah, and we talked about this on the way here, and I agree with you 100%. You asked me 7 weeks ago who would I want to see in the Grey Cup. 100% I would have said Edmonton. Of course, they were riding a losing streak instead of a winning streak. They looked bad. Right now, their offense is rolling at a disgusting level. Daron Carter, Brandon Zylstra, Mike Riley. Now you throw in CJ Gable.
And he's looked fantastic. That 15-yard touchdown that he had, oh man, made Sam Hurrell miss in the box. Deked out about another 3 or 4 guys and got pushed into the end zone, but pushed his way into the end zone too. That was one of the best runs you'll ever see. And it was a 15-yard touchdown. He's been fantastic. To our friend Sandra over in Hamilton, because that was her favorite player on the Ticats, and now he's doing well in Edmonton. And you mentioned Bo Levi Mitchell's health. That'll be interesting to see if he's actually healthy enough to, play 2 strong games for the Stamps. If he's healthy enough to play 1 strong game for the Stamps. Because he hasn't looked good. He's looked average pretty much all year. And then he's looked poor to average the last, 4 games that they played. So it'll be interesting to see, because something's not right with him. They're saying it might be his rotator cuff, and who knows how bad that's actually injured. But there's something wrong there. What I find is going to be fun about this game is watching Edmonton's offense against Calgary's defense. Calgary arguably has the best defense in the league. The depth they have on defense is insane. They don't allow a lot of points, but Edmonton's offense, like you said, Bowman, Zylstra, Darrell Walker, Gable, Riley, that is a scary offense. We talk about how our receivers are and our offense is scary. Edmonton's just as scary. Brandon Zylstra, it's his first year in the league, 1,697 yards, 7th greatest receiving season of all time in the CFL. And the guy didn't play all the games. He only played 14 games.
When you got an offense that has a guy like Adarius Bowman as your third option, that's a scary receiving core.
Yep. And look what happens when you forget about him. He burns you for long touchdowns.
And I said Winnipeg. And I said this when he came back, and I got a little heat from Bakari Grant for it. I said, you put in, they've got arguably the best quarterback in the league, now with the best receiving core in the league. I look back on it since, we've got 4,000-yard receivers in ours now. So it's fairly A-B or 1A, 1B to me. But as far as talent goes, I would put Mike Riley and Brandon Zylstra as the number one quarterback and number one receiver in the league.
Yep.
And far outranging anybody else. Against, I don't care what defense they're going against. Zylstra's going to get, he's going to get his.
100 plus. I don't know how many, 9 games, 10 games this year? Yeah, they're a scary offense. So the matchup against Calgary's defense is going to be, that'll be a fun one to watch. And again, the Battle of Alberta is always fun to watch. It's always a heated matchup. Labor Day rematch. Now in the playoffs, amp it up another level. That'll be something else. So all I know is that I hope these two teams kick the crap out of each other. And if I don't condone injuries, but if a guy happens to pull a hammy or something and can't play for a week after that, I wouldn't be upset. Just a 1 week little tweak, you know, something like that. I'm not upset about.
You know, I won't go that far. Just enough that it affects his performance the week after. Not enough that he has to sit out. Just a little slower. Like Greg Ellingson said last week.
Oh man,
I want to see best against best.
Yeah, you don't ever see, and it's tough watching a guy that's clearly injured hobble around when there's another guy on the roster that could probably come in and play better than him, but because he's not Greg Ellingson, doesn't get the chance. And really, is he helping the team more than he's hurting it?
He wasn't doing much to help it with the. What did he end the game with?
50 yards, 60 yards. Yeah.
I mean, if you told me before the game that Trevor Harris would have 450 yards and 50 of them would be to Greg Ellingson, I'd have asked for whatever the hell it was you were smoking.
I said that the Ottawa Rodder game might be the best game of the playoffs. I'm saying now that the Toronto Saskatchewan game might be the best game of the playoffs. I don't know if this might be the best game of the playoffs. I think it'll be a low scoring game, but it's going to be a real physical game. This is going to be, you know, that typical playoff football. And one in the trenches, like, this is going to be a hard-hitting game. I mean, these teams hate each other on a good day. So let's see how they do in a one-game elimination to go to the championship.
It ain't going to be pretty.
No, and I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to watch that one, too. This is going to be a good, fun weekend full of football.
And I might stick around to the press box just to watch that one, too.
Yeah, that'll be something. And, hey, $3 beers, you can't go wrong there.
We got a hockey game after that. Yes, you can.
Yeah, that's true. Now, well, we talked about the games. Let's do our picks for the game. So, division finals. Who is going to the Grey Cup? And if you asked me before the season started if the Riders would be in a conference final, I probably wouldn't have agreed. I saw them in the playoffs. I didn't see them getting to the finals. So, I don't want to say they're playing with house money already, because they're obviously not. I want them to have a good outing and won't be just satisfied if they just get to the game and end up losing, but it'll be interesting. Riders at Toronto, Edmonton at Calgary.
All right, two things for this for me. Number one, before the playoffs started, I think we all predicted the same Grey Cup, and nothing about last week's games make me any less confident that I'd got to go Saskatchewan and Edmonton. But the one thing I love, and this leans back to the Riders, and I know people say you shouldn't need bulletin board material, but you know what? How many players did we see come out after the game and comment on the whole 2.11% to make the cup that the Riders were predicted by the CFL page? I saw at least a couple of them, and some were also retweeted by other players.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're 21%.
19.
Is it 19?
19%.
Oh, right. So 81% and 19.
So I have it here ahead of me. The probabilities of the Grey Cup matchup. And this is the CFL simulation that was done. Toronto against Edmonton, 48%. Toronto against Calgary, 31%. The Riders against Edmonton, 12%. The Riders against Calgary, 7%. So 19%.
And I don't get why.
They have a better record than Toronto. They had a better record than Ottawa.
They beat them both times.
Both times they won in the visitor barn, where they have to do it in the playoffs. They know what it takes to win there. They have a veteran team, a good mix of veteran and young players, but the veterans, they've won before.
I mean, a part of me could understand the low percentage going into the Eastern Semi, only because we've got 10 instances of a team crossing over and never once making it to the big game.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get past that Eastern Semifinal, we're now one game away. And if you had to sit down, take everything else aside and go, Riders versus Argos, who do you pick? And you set it out, you know, offense, defense, special teams. Tell me you wouldn't pick the Riders 9 times out of 10.
I'd pick the Riders.
Right? And I think most would, given how the season has gone. And yet here we are, looking at 19% chance that the Riders make the Grey Cup. And you know damn well the players are seeing that.
Well, they see it.
And they will use that. Whether you think players need bulletin board material or not, anything that they can use to up an edge just a little bit is a good thing. And I love that the Riders are. If the Riders go on to the Grey Cup, we all know they're going to be underdogs in that game too.
Yep.
And probably at the same percentage.
And that one rightfully so.
Yep. I wouldn't argue with it.
But right now, nope.
I don't see them as an underdog.
Nope, no reason to.
And I'm sorry, I went to a game in Toronto this year. Their crowd that was there was great. They made a ton of noise, considering I think there was 13,000 for the game that I went to.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a lot of green in that barn. So normally you give a three-point bonus to home field advantage. I'll give one or two, because there's going to be some going the other way.
Yep.
But you take that part away, I see the Riders as favorites. And we know they won't be. And I love it, because the players will see it.
That's fine with me.
Yeah.
Pressure's always on the home team in the playoffs. Always, always, always. Doesn't matter the records, it's on the home team. All the pressure was on Ottawa because they wanted to win the Grey Cup at home and because they were defending Grey Cup champions. And all the pressure is going to be on Toronto. And we'll see how they respond after a bye, too, because, I mean, we were just talking about it with Calgary. Teams that come off the bye, if you can get onto them quick, it's hard for them to kind of get back into it because they haven't been playing game speed in a couple weeks. The other team's riding the momentum.
At least in Toronto's case, they've had meaningful games right up to the last game.
Yeah,
of the
every
year.
Single one was.
But still, you get a bye week at the wrong time.
Ottawa.
And one thing I got. I'm sorry, I'll let you make your picks first.
All right. So you had the Riders in Edmonton.
Yep.
I have who I think are going to win, the Riders in Edmonton. Who I want, the Riders in Calgary.
Think of this. See. I was going to say, think of the storylines.
But we also know a lot of Stamps fans. We know Edmonton fans that are coming to the Grey Cup as well. But we know a lot. I think we know a lot more Stamps fans that are coming out to Grey Cup. And they came out here to Regina this year already, the dream team. And they're a fun group. And could you just imagine? I just thought about this the other day, too. It's like, what if everyone's talking about Edmonton going to get in, right? And they're the hottest team. That's who I'm picking. I think it might be a lot more fun with our, you know, number one rival, the Stamps, with their fans there that we've had here in Regina or from early this year, that whole week, because we'll see them a bunch.
Smack talk.
Right? And I think that might be more fun. And I don't think there's anything better than beating the best team in the playoffs. There's nothing better than you know, the underdog team beating the number one seed. There's nothing better than that.
Yeah, look back to 1989.
Yeah.
Jeff Fairholm would probably say the same thing.
Yeah, like to me, and as a fan, that's what people want to see. New England Patriots in 2007, 18-0 going into the Super Bowl. Nothing was better than to see them lose to the New York Giants because nobody gave the Giants a chance. And maybe that happens with the Riders against Calgary.
You know, I look at that game, and no matter which way it goes, assuming, again, this is all assuming, knock on wood,
yeah,
that the Riders get to the dance, the storylines into that game are going to be great. It's either going to be Chris Jones against his former team, which you know... You've seen how much Edmonton fans hate Chris Jones. I can't wait. Like, I would love nothing more than Chris Jones to beat Edmonton in the Grey Cup. But then look at it the other side. The Riders against Bo Levi Mitchell. All the pre-practice squad crap from last year.
Yep.
And just everything. The one question...
Bo trolling the Rider fans this year, too.
The question I have to ask, and I'm going to ask you this. The Riders versus Stamps Grey Cup. What jersey are you wearing?
Well, I'm wearing my jersey, which is a green jersey. I won't be wearing somebody else's jersey this game. No matter how good I looked in it. Again, that's still the best looking of somebody ever wearing red has ever looked. So, not like that's going very far, but hey, Stamps jerseys do not look good. Doesn't matter who's wearing them. This is going to be fun. We're one game away from the Grey Cup. Think about it. This time next week, as we record, this is Tuesday night. We'll be going to bed at this time next week. Because we have an early flight out to Grey Cup in Ottawa next Wednesday morning. So we'll record our show next Monday, and we could be doing a game preview of the Riders in the Grey Cup.
God, I certainly hope so.
I think we're coming off as like pretty confident that they're going to be in there, and I feel like they should be confident, and we should be confident, because I think I truly, truly believe that they will be in the Grey Cup, and I don't see them losing to Toronto. I never really thought that we'd see that this year.
Right? You said it before. I feel like we're playing on house money right now. If you would have told me at the beginning of the year that we would have made the playoffs in year two of a full rebuild,
yeah,
I'd have been like, hell yeah, I'm in. You know, let's plan for 2018. Let's get over that hump next year. You know, let's get that little taste of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Not anymore. I want the cup now.
It's full on win.
Yeah. I want the cup.
This season.
And this team has the team to do it.
Yep. And they have guys that want to win. Guys that haven't won that want to win. How many guys on this team want to win for Kevin Glenn?
There's fans of teams that hate the Riders that want Kevin Glenn to win. I love that.
See, and they say that he deserves a cup, and now I don't buy into the fact that, and we're running out of time here, I don't buy into the fact that anybody deserves a championship. You have to go out and earn it. Like, that's my belief.
Yep.
But if there's any one player that comes close to that, it's Kevin Glenn.
And I think most fans across the league, other than his occasional haters, and he's got a few, there's people who still think he doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame.
Wins a Grey Cup here, that shuts them up pretty damn fast.
That discussion is over.
Yeah, it's not close then. But he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
The guy's...
The only thing missing from his resume
is a Grey Cup ring. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he already kind of won one for the Riders back in 07, so that kind of counts, right?
Kind of disappointed Winnipeg won't be in it. I mean, I know. Not really. Nothing makes me happier than watching Winnipeg season end. It's one of those things, right? Like, I got a little... Chippy with a Bombers fan today. He was looking for house cleaning services, and I suggested he check with the Bombers front office. He didn't like that too much. But I mean, I love the CFL. Rivalries across the board, but in the end, it's fun.
It's all fun. Exactly. Well, so I guess we both have Saskatchewan and Edmonton meeting in the Grey Cup. Another Prairie Grey Cup, and it'll be two West teams in the Grey Cup, which might put more honey in the pot for the whole discussion about getting rid of divisions.
Won't happen.
Yeah, we can talk about that in the postseason, but yeah, that won't happen. But that's just another, you know, fuel to the fire, and then just another reason saying, hey, let's get the best teams in there, and these might be the two best teams heading into the playoffs, and they might meet in the playoffs in the Grey Cup.
I will say this, listening back to this show next week, if we lose, we'll suck.
Yeah.
A lot.
Well, luckily that won't be the case because the Riders will win. Next week's show, like you said. We'll recap this Riders-Argos East Final. We'll recap the Edmonton-Calgary Battle of Alberta West Final. And we will know who's in the Grey Cup. And we will preview that Grey Cup game in Ottawa. I don't really know what else to say. Like, I'm just excited about the thought. Like, just the wheels are turning in my head that we'd be doing a game preview of the Riders in the Grey Cup. And then we'll be there a couple days later. Should have had a podcast back in 2013. How much fun would that have been?
I'm not sure I would have been capable of doing a podcast that week. All you would have heard was Riders.
That sounds good to me. We'll see if we have a rant next week. Amy will be back with the Hottie Bowl, and we'll talk Grey Cup. That's going to be it. Next week is Grey Cup.
Man, the season's over in a week and a half.
I know.
I mean,
it's the second worst day on the Monday after the Grey Cup is the second worst day on the calendar year.
What's the worst day?
The day after the Super Bowl, because then no football. At least right now you have a fallback with the NFL. There's still football on for you know, another 2 months.
I'm a Packers fan. I don't have football to look forward to anymore this year.
Yeah, they ruined a bet for me. Thanks a lot, Packers, you jerks.
Denver Broncos.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Embrace the tank. Get a nice high draft pick anyway. But next week, Grey Cup.
God, I can't wait.
And here we go. It's going to be a lot of fun. So...
And if you're looking for tickets, apparently there's a bunch on the market right now.
Yeah, won't be hard to get Grey Cup tickets. There's still tickets for the East Final in Toronto, and they're as low as $27.
If you're in the area, get your ass out to a game. I don't care what team you support.
And then Calgary, too.
Just watch some football.
Calgary, they're offering tickets for $25.
Get out and watch some playoff football.
Yep, get out there, and both should be fantastic games. So, well, that'll do it for us this week. Give us a follow on Twitter at PifflesPod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
You can follow me at Safamud.
Give Amy a follow as well at CFL Hottie Bowl. And of course, give her your Hottie Bowl suggestions. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. We're on Instagram as well. Just search PifflesPod. And check out the website, PifflesPodcast.com. Have a couple giveaways coming up this week, so make sure you tune in for that. And of course, we have our Press Box Playoff Watch Party again. So that's in Regina if you want to come out to the Press Box Sports Bar. Reservation set for 11:30. Get in there, get a couple drinks before the game starts. 12 o'clock, kickoff, Riders Argos, East Final, and we'll have another couple giveaways. We'll be giving away Chad Owens' signed print as well, too. So
former Argo.
Yeah.
But not Peter Diakowski. He is not a former Argo.
No. Even if you ask him, and we did. But if you want to come out, watch the game with us and a whole bunch of other Rider fans. It was a great time last week. We want to do it again. Meet some more of you guys. Just shoot us a message. Tweet us at PifflesPod, Facebook. Give us anywhere you can find Piffle's podcast, send us a message. We will see it, and we'll get you down for coming out to the game. It'll be great, and we'll have a great time watching the Riders continue their road to the Grey Cup. Thanks for listening.
We're drinking town with a football problem.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.